From the dawn of time, man has been obsessed with himself. And it didn't take long for us to realise that we could present ourselves with a little editorial discretion. David, there's children in the museum. Not only did our ancestors try to hide their insecurities, but they also hid their true facial features. For instance, the puckered lips on Rembrandt's 1640 self-portrait could be the world's first documented duck face. If you could have followed Frida Kahlo on Instagram, you would have become well acquainted with her face. No time to pluck the eyebrows, Frida would have needed a weed whacker. Vincent van Gogh, lend me your ear. He produced over 40 self-portraits in the span of 3 years and never a hint of a smile. The most unhappy man I've ever seen. With the emerging world of photography in the 19th century, selfies became more popular than ever before. Which brings us to modern day. You may no longer have to deal with the hassles of traditional media, but there's nothing new about taking a selfie.
Good morning. Really warms my heart to see that first song today. The youth put so much work into putting that together, and to see the whole band participate was really a wonderful thing. So you can see our series for the next couple of weeks here is called Death to Selfie, and I would be remiss if I didn't start out. Everybody say cheese, 1, 2, 3. All right, got that out of the way. If that's going to be my last one, I want it to be with you guys. This isn't a series about logging out of Facebook or quitting Instagram or anything like that. We're going to start this morning in Genesis chapter 32. So if you've got a Bible, a cell phone, or a tablet, pull that out. We're going to start out today by reading. So Genesis 32, verses 22 through 31. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two female servants, and I'm going to pause there, and I'm going to leave that whole series to Steve or Alan. His 11 sons, and crossed the ford at Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all of his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When he saw the man that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with him, with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God, with humans, and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. As we will see, the story about Jacob starts much earlier than this. Jacob has wrestled with his family, with God, with himself since birth. I think that is the same with many of us. We wrestle with who we are versus who we think we should be. Pray with me to start. Father God, as we look into your word this morning, I ask that you speak to each and every one of us. I ask that your spirit move among us, and that may my words and our worship be a pleasing sound to you. Amen. There are over 1 million selfies posted every day, and I'm not sure how many my family contributes, but I think that we probably put a dent in the selfie world. I like that one. I am probably more guilty than most. You gotta love filters. As we saw in the video to start this series, this isn't a new phenomenon. Selfies are not new, although I do think that that picture of Michelangelo with the camera may have been photoshopped. As we go through the next 4 weeks, it's not a mystery to anyone that now more than ever, we are in a me-first society. As we go through the next 4 weeks, we're going to let the life of Jacob and at times other people in the Bible demonstrate that we are not unique in our struggle. Jacob was a complicated guy. He was flawed. He did some bad stuff, as we'll see. We will let Jacob teach us that when we get rid of the filters, the hashtags, the retakes, and the edits, God is waiting to bless us, the real unfiltered version of us. So Jacob's story started at birth. Isaac prayed to the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was childless. The Lord answered his prayer, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. The babies jostled each other within her, and she said, "Why is this happening to me?" So they prayed to get pregnant, and then she says, "Why is this happening to me?" That's another lesson too. So she went to inquire of the Lord. The Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger." When the time came to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first came out was red. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so they named him Jacob. Isaac was 61 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. That's in Genesis 25. We can see that from the beginning, Jacob wanted to be first. He's literally grabbing his brother's heel as he's on the way out of the womb. It's a good thing there wasn't 3D sonogram at that time, because it had been like a UFC pay-per-view event, it sounds like. So let me ask a couple of questions. Who here has had a child that you had to teach the word no to? You had to teach them no. That's good. Who has had to teach their child mine? Not as many. See, this me first thing is natural. We have to teach please. We have to teach thank you. We have to teach our children to share. But none of us are much different than the newborn Jacob. I'm sure that everyone has either seen kids or tried to be a kid that gets something first. A little about myself, I come from a blended family. When I was an early teenager, my wife married a man, and there was four boys all of a sudden in the house. And yes. Yeah. See, you're on my mind all the time, honey. So there was a 16-year-old boy, two 14-year-olds. I was one of the 14-year-olds, and a 7-year-old. And everything in our house was a competition. It didn't matter what it was. So it was time to eat. The person that finished first got seconds. And so there are four sides to a dining room table, and I can tell you that dinner time was like real-life Hungry Hungry Hippos. It was an intense thing. If it was time to go and get in the car to go somewhere, there were six of us in a Volkswagen Rabbit. That meant two people were in the hatchback and you didn't want to be there. We would literally get stuck going through the front door, shoulder to shoulder, and inevitably the 7-year-old would start crying and we'd all be in trouble. And it's a whole other story. There are more examples that I could use from my professional life, my college days, my volunteer efforts. Me first is everywhere. How can you have a God-first focus in a me-first world? Jesus had something to say about this. Matthew 19. "But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first." See, Jacob was always grabbing for heels. Just call me Jacob. I admit that I'm bad at me first. I recently set a goal to rank higher on our company's LinkedIn page. I went through and started doing updates and sharing profiles and doing lots of activity. I went from number 125 to number 3 in the company. And I was very proud of myself, but then my boss started asking me if I was looking for another job. And that wasn't the intention at all. And so be careful what you wish for. See, you've got LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, MySpace. Okay, maybe not MySpace. It's about how many likes, how many shares, how many views, how many hearts, how many. It's exhausting to be full-time me first. Maybe you're out there and you don't do social media, so you're immune, right? Am I on the right task force at work? Is my office big enough? Was I included on that email? Did you give me credit for that idea? Was I mentioned in the company newsletter? Where can I get on the org chart? Did I get invited to the power lunch? How big is my expense account? You got work under control? Volunteer board of directors, youth activity committee, running concession stands, football project committee member, vice president of the club. Do I have the keys for this room or that? I haven't touched you yet. Am I wearing the right brand, driving the right car, living the right neighborhood? Do I have a pool? How much do I weigh? It's ironic that Steve talked about this, because little does he know that he and I are in the biggest loser, Jeremy's Brain edition. I'm losing, by the way. Those are just scratching the surface of my me-first problems. If I allow myself to stay in that place, I cannot possibly have room to focus on God. We live in an world, richer, faster, thinner, buffer. C.S. Lewis says, we don't always take pride in a particular possession. We take pride in having more of that possession than someone else. If you're anything like me, you're just like Jacob, always reaching for the person's heel in front of us. Again, Jesus had a word. In Luke 9:25, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose their very self? What good is the job, the bod, the car, the house, if along the way you've lost who you are in the process? The next chapter in the twin story, they're growing up. See, Jacob and Esau were very different. Esau was an outdoorsman and Jacob was a mama's boy. It says in Genesis 25, the boys grew up and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. One day, Jacob tricks Esau into giving him his birthright, and that's the subject of another message, so I won't go into it here, but Jacob's trickery doesn't stop there. See, in Genesis 27, it tells a story of when Jacob and Rebekah conspire to steal the blessing of Esau as the firstborn. And while Jacob may have been grasping at that heel, Esau was had the right to the birthright and the father's blessing. And so Isaac is getting older and his vision is starting to go. And he tells Esau, it's time for me to give you this blessing. And so he tells Esau to go and hunt and, you know, kill him some game and make it like he likes it. And I'm going to come in and give you that blessing. And Rebekah overhears this. So her and Jacob, she hatches this plan. So Jacob says, she says to Jacob, go and go kill a goat real quick. Come back and feed it, or come back and prepare it so you can feed it to your father. We're going to put some goat skin on you and you'll fool your father. And if you read that, you might think, gosh, man, that was really Rebekah's doing. And you start to feel sorry for Jacob. But don't be misled. Jacob was 76 at the time, so it's somewhere in your 70s you stop blaming your mother. So Jacob and his mother go through with the plan. They get the food that Isaac likes. They dress Jacob in Esau's clothes. They put goat skin on him and send him in to get the blessing. And we're going to pick up the story in verse 18, Genesis 27. He went to his father and he said, "My father." Isaac replies, "Yes, my son." And this is key. Who is it? Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that I may give you your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly?" "The Lord your God gave me success." That's a pretty bold one there. He replied, "Then Isaac said to Jacob, 'Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not.' Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, 'The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau.' He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy like those of his brother Esau. So he proceeded to bless him. 'Are you really my son Esau?' he asked. 'I am,' he replied. Then he said, 'My son, bring me some of your game to eat so that I may give you my blessing.'" There's a hidden lesson in there about being so good at pretending to be somebody else that you fool those closest to you, but I'm not going to get into that today. So shortly, so they go through the ceremony and he delivers the blessing and he goes through and he finishes that and Jacob leaves and Esau returns triumphantly from his hunt and he's going to get his blessing and he goes in and he starts talking to Isaac and Isaac says, "Who is it?" He said, "This is Esau. I've done what you said." And it is discovered that Jacob has stolen this blessing from him and Esau is, as you can imagine, not very pleased. He's armed and he is looking for Jacob. He vows to kill Jacob. So Rebekah gets wind that his mama's boy is in trouble, and she tells him, "You got to run." God can't bless who you pretend to be. See, Jacob wanted what Esau had, so he put on the disguise to get it. We're no different. We start to act like, wear, walk, talk, like the people that we're trying to get what they have. If they have this, then I'll do what they do to get what they've got. How many times have we put on a disguise to get what we want? I'm not talking about Halloween night. Jacob pulled it off, and guess what? Jacob got what he wanted, but he didn't want what he got. He spent 21 years on the run from Esau. What good is a blessing that you get from your father when you can't even stay in the house to enjoy it? You get the attention that you're looking for, but you have to spend all of your time being the person that you had to create in order to keep getting the attention. But disguises are not always literal. I have another confession for you. I am a gadget junkie. Well, I'm a recovering gadget junkie because I've gotten better over the last few years, but I can tell you that there was a time when I would massage budgets, I would massage Jennifer, I would do whatever it is because I've convinced myself that this gadget is important to me and it's going to make me happy, and I would get it, and inevitably in a matter of weeks or a matter of months, there was no joy to be had in that. Perhaps you've had the same experience. Maybe with you it's not a gadget. Maybe it's an outfit, a car, a job, a house. Unfortunately, for some people, it's even a spouse. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose their very self? Jesus tells us. Be true to yourself. Jacob finally grabs a hold of the right heel. Jacob has spent 21 years, not desolate, but working. He's got married. He's got kids, as we read about. He's successful. But he decides after this time on the run that he is going to go back and reconcile with Esau. And that's what we read earlier, here he's sending everybody ahead of him and spending time alone. When we very first started to read this morning, how old did you think Esau was when you envisioned him wrestling with a man overnight in a tent? Right? For me, I thought like 25, whatever. But if we do the math, he was 76 when he stole the blessing. He was on the run for 21 years. The man was 97 years old. It may bring new light to your hip going out if somebody touches it. So then we go back and we look at some of those statements from the beginning. We read, "Then the man said, 'Let me go, for it is daybreak.' But Jacob replied, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.'" Man, this sounds a whole lot like that deceiver, doesn't it? Is this the same Jacob that it was when he stole his brother's blessing? He spent all night wrestling with the guy, and he's not going to let that go to waste, right? The man asks him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answers. This is not the same trickster that we read about. Jacob is answering truthfully. In that moment, God blessed him. "Then the man said, 'Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans and have overcome.'" See, when Jacob shows his true self to God, God blesses him. In all of his ugliness, he said his name. He didn't wear any disguises. Jacob the heel grabber, Jacob the deceiver. God just wanted to talk to Jacob. He didn't want to talk to Jacob pretending to be Esau. He doesn't want to talk to the popular kid. He doesn't want to talk to the CEO, not the person with the most likes, not the internet famous person. He just wanted Jacob. "Call me Jacob." In God's supreme wisdom, in the most beautiful part of this story, God says that he is the God of Jacob too. In Exodus 3:6, we read, "Then he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.'" See, when he renamed Jacob to Israel, Israel means triumphant with God. And so it would have been easy for God to say right there that "I am the God of Israel" instead of Jacob. "I am the God of the triumphant. I'm the God of the redeemed. I'm the God of the perfected." But instead, when he's talking, he says, "I am the God of Jacob. I am the God of the heel grabber. He is the God of the imperfect, and he is the God of this recovering junkie addict." Thank you.